You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey, I'm Brian Hyatt, and this is Rolling Stone Music Now. There's a new three-part documentary about Kanye West called Genius. It hits Netflix February 16th. So what's really special about this documentary is that the filmmakers had access to Kanye starting in 2002 or so. You see Kanye before he even signed his deal with Def Jam, and the access goes all the way up to almost the present day. So it's definitely the most intimate look we've had at Ye in his entire career. Obviously, he's been a controversial figure. I think it really humanizes him. You see footage of him with his late mother, Donda, that stuff we've never seen before. You really start to understand that relationship, and there's a ton more. In a little bit, I'm going to bring on the directors, Kudi and Chike, to talk about the process behind the film, as well as Ye's recent request to have final cut of it, which they turned down. But first, I want to bring on Rolling Stone's own film expert, David Fear, to talk a little bit about Genius and put it in some context. It is interesting, just more broadly, that the streaming era is leading towards these longer, specifically music documentaries. It doesn't seem a coincidence that we got the longest Beatles documentary ever made. Well, maybe Beatles Anthology was longer, but you know what I mean. A very long Beatles documentary and a very long Kanye documentary. Do you think it's mostly for the good, or do you think that we're losing that discipline of getting it down to 2 hours?
As much as I have a couple of issues with Genius, I think it sort of needs to be a three-part, what is it, like close to 7 hours, I believe? It sort of needs that length. It needs that space. It needs to be able to tell that story because, again, you're talking about a guy who was... So for people who don't know the backstory, I'll make this very brief. There was a stand-up comic and a public access cable show host named Kudi, who was in Chicago. And in, I believe it was the mid-90s, late 90s, he meets this guy at Jermaine Dupri's birthday party. And he's this young up-and-coming producer who's working with Harlem World. And he's very charismatic and seems very sweet, but just very ambitious and clearly has a good ear for stuff. And that's an extremely young Kanye West. And because these two guys eventually hit it off, Kudi is kind of allowed to document his career as it begins happening. And then once Kanye West becomes a superstar, even though there's some kind of periods of fallout, Kudi keeps coming back along with his partner, Chike Oza. They keep coming back and filming more and more of him as Kanye starts to go, as it goes from what I like to say, Kanye mania to Kanye's mania. You need 7 hours to tell that story. I think you really need to get the breadth of it without reducing Kanye's narrative, which, let's be honest, Brian, is a very complex, complicated, twist and turn filled narrative, reducing it to a very kind of like a simple rise and fall arc. Kanye doesn't fit into that. Kanye doesn't fit into anything according to Kanye, but like Kanye really does not fit into that kind of easy narrative.
It still paints, I think, the most intimate and revealing portrait of Kanye, and sometimes damning. I just spoke to these guys, they're reluctant to kind of discuss that. It's the same way if you write an article and you're just kind of presenting the facts about someone, you don't want someone in an interview drawing you out to say, well, I think that was really damning when he did that. I think you want people to draw their own conclusions. And I think that's probably some of what's happening. But one of the last scenes is him getting very excited about praise from Tucker Carlson. That was unnerving, you know, and that's pretty much where we leave him. And yet, you kind of still end up agreeing with the filmmakers that Kanye's story is far from over, that there still is a lot of hope here, which is really weird. It's just, and I think part of it is because, you know, the first part in where it's really, really immersive, it could have stood obviously on its own. The first part where they really were with him every minute, Kudi was just was such a familiar presence that, you know, everyone, like Jay-Z's giving him a pound. Everyone knew Kudi, and he was just there with his camera the whole time. You know, he said in the interview that it's almost like he wasn't working. He was just so used to having that camera there, and that's so invaluable. And I think everything about that part is so valuable to me. It's also just a reminder of, you know, what a studio was like back then, what what it was like to be around Jay-Z, what it was like in this thriving, basically all-black world of hip-hop where there was mutual affection and respect between everyone working in it. But then, most importantly, of Kanye as this unbelievably talented. And I think, I don't know about you, but it reminded me of his talent as a pure rapper, because you always kind of want to put him in this vein of a record maker where he's obviously was the producer first.
What I find so fascinating about the documentary as a whole, even when you start getting irritated with Kanye, is that you get this really beautiful on the ground glimpse of what was happening at hip hop, how Kanye really was this kind of bridge between the underground backpackers and what I like to call like the corporate hip hop incorporated. And to kind of see those two worlds starting to kind of bridge and collide with each other is phenomenal.
What are some precedents for a documentary filmed over this many years with this kind of access, whether in music or outside of music? Because that's one of the things that makes it very unique.
In terms of people who have managed to embed themselves and go along the way, especially over that period of time, it's pretty tough to think of. I mean, I can think of some great embedded music documentaries. I mean, Don't Look Back being the exemplar, as it is for most music documentaries and a lot of documentaries in general. I would love to have seen Robert Frank, after Cocksucker Blues, I would have loved to have seen Robert Frank stick around and like make a Rolling Stone documentary that, goes into the 80s and the Steel Wheels tour and all of that. I would have loved to have seen them go from the guys trashing the hotel room and with the groupies on the planes to becoming this kind of corporate rock entity.
I think Don't Look Back obviously doesn't have the temporal scope, but it's a fun comparison because I think some of the scenes that are captured are in that vein, especially all the kind of subtleties of the interaction of Kanye with other famous people. There's a scene when he seems to be making Justin Bieber uncomfortable towards the end, when Justin Bieber finally finds someone whose religious fervor perhaps exceeds his own and is making him squirmingly uncomfortable on camera, which is just classic. It's unspoken, but he's just sitting there while Kanye's speaking.
You can see him recoil at points, and I wholeheartedly agree, yeah.
Yeah. And then around the same time, there's an amazing bit where Rick Rubin uses the phrase excited on a phone call with Kanye. And Kanye, and what's actually one of my favorite things, it's actually a personality trait that I really appreciate. You see how he bristles at certain things and takes offense at things that, aren't intended to be offensive, but it's fascinating to see how many times it happens over a course of 2 decades. Someone will say he listens very closely to what people say.
Yep.
And you know what? There might have been a note of insincerity in the way when Rick Rubin said excited, actually. In Kanye's defense, he may have actually picked up a slight note of insincerity, leapt upon it, and said, I prefer the word energized, and had, frankly, an explanation I didn't really understand about why the word excited was bad. But then you can see Rick is so freaked out, and Rick has a line that I intend to steal, which he says, no problem. You know I love to learn.
I forgot about that, and it's one of my favorite scenes in the entire 3-part documentary.
I think overall, as I discussed with the filmmakers, the most humanizing stuff and moving is with his mom, who really comes to life in this movie. Donda is very much a character, and you get a sense of just, she was so simpatico with Ye. She really knew his music. She wasn't some distant mom figure who wasn't. She knew every line of his music. She was a fan and a supporter, and you can see how much she was this lifeline to him, and you can understand, a lot of it goes unspoken, why her loss was so devastating to him and really set him off on a little bit of a downward spiral in some ways.
You really get to see an entirely different side of Kanye in those scenes with his mom. I think there's a difference between confessional and vulnerable. I think My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy is a great confessional album. I think those scenes that you see with him and his mom in this documentary, however, are vulnerable. Like, absolutely 110% vulnerable.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
There's a scene near the end where he's with a bunch of real estate developers.
Yes.
And they're all kind of sitting around in this veranda. This house is basically just overlooking paradise. It's this absolutely gorgeous view. And they're kind of pointing over to this area off to the side where they're thinking about potentially developing. And Kanye might have a chance to kind of to get in there. And you almost see in real time, I hate to use this word, but it just, you see him unravel and kind of just ever so slightly start to go off the rails to the point where the filmmaker's like, I wasn't really comfortable filming this.
Yeah, could have turned off the camera, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, for as much joy as you get to see in this documentary, there are moments like that where you really feel like you're witnessing a car accident happening in slow motion before you, and you're kind of powerless to stop it.
And what's interesting is that scene happens shortly after you see him in a context that you kind of, because of the gaps in filming, you never see the setup. He's become this fashion mogul. You know, that's what's wild is, and it's easy to forget. And I think just one of the things about the movie is just remind you of all the stuff that happened. I had actually forgotten that he had been involuntarily hospitalized. I had actually forgotten that. That's how much stuff, Drew, is how much stuff you have to do in your life before someone who covers this stuff for a living forgot that you were involuntarily hospitalized for mental health issues. I mean, that's wild, but it's just, it's been a very busy life. But what I was saying though, is in the midst of all of that, this guy built something like a $1 billion empire of fashion. And you see him in those little scenes when he's in China, he's looking at the colorways of the sneakers and just very granular detail. And he's right. It was exactly the same way that he's talking about music in the first couple parts.
Yep.
So he, for all the mockery he sustained, he was right. The same part of his brain that made hit music and made him one of the most important artists alive turned out to be perfectly applicable to becoming a huge fashion power.
Yeah.
And so there he is. And this happened while he was dealing with these mental health crises.
Yeah.
Which is also just basically unfathomable. It actually reminds me, I kind of came to the Rolling Stone offices once. Were you there?
I think this was before my time.
Okay. He was doing this thing where he was coming to various offices, to Facebook, to Google. And then someone on our team tweeted at him and was like, come to Rolling Stone. And he was like, all right. And showed up. This was around just before the release of Dark Twisted Fantasy. And he played a lot of the songs. He stood up on the table and rapped. He ran around the room and asked every single intern what they thought of it. Then he asked the interns what they were listening to. And I think perhaps not all the interns gave answers that were relevant to it. One of them said the Kinks, and he said to his assistant, write that down, which was very funny. But I wanted to be like, Kanye, not all these interns are like the cool, young, hip people you're looking for. Some of them are just young classic rock fans, but that's another story. But anyway, when he was there, I remember, I think this is the only time in my life, I think, that I ever got to ask Kanye a question, because he was talking about, you know, he's going to change. This was post the Taylor incident, and he was talking about how he wants to totally change as a person. And I said, I thought it was very interesting what you're saying about changing. Do you think human beings can change that fundamentally based on what you're talking about? And he looked at me and he said, well, I'm a very special person. That was David Fear talking about the new Kanye West documentary, Genius. And now here are the two directors of Genius, Kudi and Chike. They're going to talk about how it all came together and more.
After this incredible journey, how does it feel for the world to be seeing it?
Oh, man, I'm energized for the world to see it. You know what I mean? We say 21 years, definitely for me. Like, I met Kanye when he was 17. I interviewed him in 1998. But me filming and documenting his journey started in, you know, 2001. We always say everything happens in God's time, and it's the perfect time for this to come out.
Obviously, there was a long period in which you were out of touch with Kanye. Was there a period where you almost forgot about what you had because you were working on so many other things?
No, I always knew I had this amazing footage. The bigger Kanye got, I thought about this footage like, yo, yeah, I got the beginnings of Kanye. And then it was amazing how he had a song called The Old Kanye.
I miss the old Kanye, straight from the gold Kanye, chop up the soul Kanye, set on his goals Kanye, I hate the new Kanye.
And people, I want to see the old Kanye, where's the old Kanye? I'm like, I have the old Kanye in his bag, a duffel bag full of old Kanye, you know. So it's amazing how that was happening.
I think one thing everyone's curious about, and it gets into some of the larger issues of control, you may or may not see it this way, but Ye himself gave you the biggest possible advertisement for this movie with his post that he wanted Final Cut. But maybe you can just break down what was going on there, what your reaction was to that, why he's not getting Final Cut, just all of that.
I mean, to me, it's like, God has the final cut. I know when I talked to him early on as we were putting the film together, I let him know that he had to trust me, you know, trust me as his brother to make a great film, an authentic film, to tell a story so the kids can understand the journey that it takes to get to where you want to go.
Did you communicate privately with him after he put out that message?
I just seen him the other day. Yeah, I seen him the other day and we hugged and we said we love each other and, you know, that's it. That's how, you know, when I'm with Kanye, it's Kanye, you know, Ye. Yeah, I was calling him Ye before, you know, if you watch the footage, when you watch the footage, you hear me saying, Ye, Ye, do this, Ye. You know, that was it. Now he is Ye. And then in the movie, as you see, I said, I knew Kanye, but I didn't know Yeezy, you know. So, but when I'm with him, it's Kanye, you know, it's Ye.
So, you saw him the other day. This is after he asked you to hold back and give him Final Cut. Did you discuss this issue at all when you saw him?
We didn't discuss it to that point, you know, but he'd have a process. You know, I asked him, did he watch the films? And he said he has a process. So I said, that's great. That's great that you got your process. So that's pretty much all the conversation. But, you know, we just talked as brothers from that point on.
And did you hear some of the new album?
No. He asked me to come down and hear it, but I just wait to hear it with the fans. I'm also a Kanye fan, by the way. You know, no matter what, I know that's my brother. I know I've been filming him for 21 years, but I'm actual a Kanye fan. I'm a fan of his music and his messaging.
Obviously, you have this affection for and friendship with Kanye, right? Mm-hmm. And I think in some ways, it paved the way to make this whole thing happen. In other ways, it may have made the whole thing more difficult for you, especially as his life became more complicated. I think about turning off the camera in that one scene. So maybe you can just reflect on the ways in which it was made it easier and way maybe made it harder to be his friend while also working on this.
If you know what I mean. I'm like years older than Kanye. And our dynamic was, you know, that I was more of a mentor at early on and then he became, you know, then also he became family. But I'm learning from him as well. You know, we learning from each other. So when things, you know, when I found out about the mental health, when he went off in the St. Pablo tour and he walked off the stage, you know, I felt the energy that I felt. It was like, I just felt something. I didn't know he was going to, I didn't know anything like that. When he would go off in the past, you know, I thought it was part of the show. I thought it was a part of the act and for publicity or whatever. That day, I felt something. Then I found out he went to the hospital and then they started talking about mental health. So that made me like not want to go film him. I came around to talk to him. And it's, you know, times when I didn't have a camera where I would talk to him and preach to him about the word of God, about living in the now and things like that, which he understood. But then it's like that would happen. And then next thing I know, people would pull him in other directions. So my camera had became a disguise for me to really talk to my brother. Like, oh, that's just the cameraman. You know, that's how I feel. That's how deep it was. And I use that as a tool to be close. And that's what kind of, you know, he know me for having the camera. You know, he feel comfortable with me with a camera, but.
Let's talk about the early days. What specifically, and you deserve so much credit for seeing it before a lot of people saw it. What specifically did you see in this guy that you basically packed up your life and followed him and with the goal of making a documentary.
So at that moment of me seeing Hoop Dreams and then seeing this kid that was so charismatic that actually loved the camera, I had to show Channel Zero, and I was falling in love with filmmaking. So with all these different things that had to come together for me to say, I'm gonna start documenting him and see how far his dreams would go, you know, and it was his talent as well, of course, you know, and I just couldn't believe nobody else seen what I seen. Like, I just, like, y'all don't hear this music. Kanye, and he got a song called Jesus Walks. I'm like, yo, that, I walk with Jesus walk with me. We walk. So I'm like, that's no accident. So that alone with the drive, but a lot of things is not explained. It's like you just have to follow your instincts.
The first part obviously captures so many things that are just amazing to see now. And I think one of the things that stands out is just the reminder that, first of all, in the music industry, maybe in any industry, you have to keep proving yourself again and again. It's not just one audition and then you're in. It's like he's auditioning again and again and again throughout that whole part. It seemed like you were as surprised as anyone that Def Jam wasn't putting out his album, wasn't giving a release date, that he was on the back burner. How did you make sense of that at that point?
And Chica, you explained it a better earlier, just about how what was going on at that during that time period. You know, Chica, one of
like the interesting thing as far as Cootie in that moment, you know, Cootie could have been filming. Cootie was coming from filming Channel Zero, where he's around all these people that are way more successful in their career in hip hop than Kanye. And especially when you go to Def Jam, there's some scenes that didn't make the doc when like Cootie's with Method Man. And there's moments through Cootie's footage when he's with Meth a lot. And you see this kind of affinity between Cootie and Meth. And it's like any given moment, Cootie really could start filming Method Man and have 20, this could be 21 years of Method Man. You know what I'm saying? But this is Method Man as Method Man. So for Cootie, like, right. It just goes to show you the belief that he still had in Kanye, when nobody's even in his office believing in him. He decides to just be like, okay, Method Man, this was cool, but I'm going back to Kanye because I really believe in him. And there's something about him, and I think it's bigger than just like Cootie can easily sit here and say like, oh, it was his charisma and it was this and that. I just think it was something instinctual that Cootie felt like he's telling you this divine connection that he got, this discernment that he has with God and spirituality. I think there just was that lock of instinctually like, I gotta do this. You know what I mean? Like all the other stuff was obvious, but a bigger thing was like, I've committed to this and I have to do this. And if I break that commitment, then kind of I've broken my moral kind of like agreement that I've made to accomplish this goal, you know?
Yeah, and not for nothing, you gotta realize, I didn't even know that I was working. I know Kanye worked ethic is amazing. And looking at all this footage, I'm like, wait a minute, my work that day was pretty amazing as well. I'm like, because you got to realize, I'm thinking, I'm just happy to be at Def Jam offices. Like, I might see Jay-Z. I might get to meet Jay-Z or Dame Dash, you know. So I'm happy. We just was, and also Kanye, when you move on in your passion and your things that you love to do, it's not work. We was just kicking it. We were just having a ball. Kanye was loving making music. He was loving to rap his, you know, get people reaction from his raps, you know, which were, as you see, amazing raps. But I think people just don't, it's like, if it's not making money, it don't make sense, you know? So they didn't understand it. So when me and Chica put Through the Wire together and we told this story, Steve Jobs said, it ain't about the product. It's about the story. So we told this story, and then people like, oh, I get it. I get it. And now they're like, oh, look what he's saying. Now they're starting to listen, starting to pay attention. Oh, wow. And now we have Kanye West. No, not Kanye West. Now we have Ye.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
there's a bunch of scenes that are unforgettable. One that really stuck out at me is where he's in the room with Mos Def and he starts rapping. And he starts rapping like he's in giant stadium. I mean, the most passionate performance you ever saw for like five people on a camera. And he's freaking Mos Def out in the best way. I wonder if at the time you realized how sort of wild that was, and what's your reaction, both of you, to seeing that footage later as you're putting the film together?
Well, I'll just say this real quick, and then I'll let you get, he did that all the time. It didn't matter. One person, now 100,000 people.
Yeah.
He is going to, because that's his love, you know, so that was just another day. What'd you say, Chica? How you feel about it?
It's a testament to his passion and his artistry as an artist. You know, I can definitely relate in the sense of, like, if, say, I design something on the computer, like, you're just looking to get a reaction of somebody being able to understand what you've just created. So, like, in his creation, you know, he's saying so much, and he just wants to see, like, are you hearing what he's saying? Are you reacting? What's your reaction? Are you vibing with this as much as I'm vibing with it? Because I'm definitely vibing with it. I just sat here and created this thing and spent all this time trying to put this together. So he's not even looking at, like, a Mos Def different than, like, you know, Joe Blow off the block. Joe Blow is just as important to him. His reactions is just as important. You know what I mean? And I think that's what's amazing. And I believe that to this day, Kanye's still just as passionate, where, like, he still cares about his music. He pours himself into his music.
Which could be a gift and a curse, too, because when somebody don't like it, then you're passionate about that as well.
Let's talk about Donda. For a lot of us, this is the biggest sort of picture we've gotten of her. I shed a tear when she passed in the movie, because you set it up, because you allow us to get to know her and you allow us to get to know her relationship with Kanye. What did you rediscover about her as you put together this movie?
Even, like, going through the footage, I discovered, when I was licensing, before they even started doing this movie here, Genius, I was licensing footage for the song that shocked the world, and I'm going through footage. The thing that I didn't remember seeing was when she said, Kanye, you come off a bit arrogant, but you gotta remember the giant looks in the mirror and sees nothing. And when I seen it, I was like, did she say that then? Or is she saying it right now? That's how powerful it is. And I sent it to Kanye, and I said, my subject was, your mother wanted me to send this to you. And I sent it to him.
Wow.
So that alone, and just the fact of, you know, we were really good friends. She was, you know, she just took us all, like, in as her kids, all of us, everybody, old school, ice cream, whoever was around. She was so endearing and so wanted all of us to win. And this project, while we've been, like, editing and doing things, we know Donda's spirit is right with us the whole time.
What do you take away from what you captured of him in the latter day? How much of, and I think it may be an unanswerable question for all of us, but how much of the running for president and the political stuff and the rhetoric he had out there, how much of that was his illness talking, and how much of that is the real him, and we shouldn't discount it just because that's these issues?
Well, I just say like this, and it's in the movie. Kanye said early on, he said, I have high aspirations. I have big dreams. You know what I mean? And one of the main dreams that people as a kid, you'd be like, you know, you could be president. So, and one thing about Kanye, if you say he can't do something, he want to go make it. Do you want to move more on it if you say you can't? So everybody who might have said he can't do it was the fire he needed to even do it. So that's all I can say, you know, because I can't speak for Ye, you know.
What about the Trump stuff? How do you make sense of that?
I can't make sense to you know, that's the.
I appreciate the understanding.
One thing I realize is that you only have 100% control of your mind and your thoughts only. You. Nobody else. I don't have no control over my daughter's thoughts, even though I might want to, or my girl thoughts. I only have 100% control of mine. So, and definitely not Kanye. He's a being. I don't have no control over that. Chike, we partners, but I don't have control over that. I can say, man, maybe Chike, we should do it this way, maybe this way. And he gonna say, maybe we should do it this way. and we're going to come to a common ground, because that's us. We don't move on ego, but we just don't have no control. So, you know, of nobody else's mind.
For our film, you know, we didn't come to make a commercial for Kanye. It truly was about taking these special moments that Cootie's been able to capture of Kanye and using those moments to give you context to maybe somebody that you've only seen one way, because you might, you know, the younger kids, they only seen Kanye from the media. So they only know this side of Kanye. And so to give your own context to maybe who this person is. So now that doesn't mean that once you get that context, you're going to agree with all these decisions that you see him make. It's just, you might understand them better, or you'll look at them differently. So for us, you know, we weren't trying to sway people to change their mind about how they felt about Kanye or not. We just wanted to allow you some context. You know, I can't say, I don't agree with every decision Cootie makes in life, much less, you know what I'm saying? He don't agree with every decision I make in life. You know what I mean?
You capture that conversation with his dad, which is very unusual. People don't know very much about his dad. His dad was concerned about him. And there's points where you're concerned about him, but it's a little late. We've had a little time since then. Are you concerned about him now? How are you feeling about him now?
Well, thank God I seen him yesterday, you know, and I know he's going to be all right because of his belief in Christ. So that's one thing that I'm confident about. No matter what he's going on with him, or I just know he's going to be all right because of that. And like I say, trust God, period. So my thing is always trust God, period, and we're going to be all right. And all the things that Kanye survived in his life, period, you know he's going to be all right.
I want to bring it back just one more time with an Instagram message. So I'm going to say this kindly for the last time. I must get final edit and approval on the stock before it releases on Netflix. Open the edit room immediately so I can be charged with my own image. Thank you in advance. Smiley face. What is there? First of all, is there some background that we should know about that led up to this? It suggests that, but it's Kanye, so I mean, but it suggests an ongoing conversation.
If Kanye wasn't as polarizing of a character as he was, we wouldn't have an interesting doc that would be just so highly anticipated to see. So us as filmmakers, and obviously us knowing Kanye, this just comes with the territory. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is Kanye's personality, you know? And it's really that. So you just embrace it. And then it's going to take us wherever it takes us. Like Cootie said, we just go on with the flow from there. But this is the person we're dealing with. We all know who we're dealing with. You know what I'm saying? So this is part of what makes him interesting.
Trust God, period.
Absolutely. When that showed up on Instagram, did you have any warning? Like, or just your phone starts blowing up and you're like, oh, I better look at Instagram.
Yeah, that one. phone blowing up. Oh, okay. You know, and just pray, like I said, with what we did through the wire.
Moose for breakfast, an inshow for dessert. Somebody order pancakes, I just sip the scissor. That right there could drive a sane man busy.
The video, you know, and this, you have to trust me. I'm a filmmaker. Me and Chica are filmmakers. Second, me and Chica has a company called what? Creative Control. We have that company because you don't want to lose your creative control, you know? And it's not a definitive documentary about Kanye. This is a documentary about faith, about moving in faith and accomplishing your dreams.
I want to ask about just the process, because you had so much footage. How much footage did you have versus what we saw? How much did you have to cut out?
Okay, so we had to cut out 325 hours. We had to cut out. We had 330 hours of
holy shit.
Footage.
Wow.
So, and what we have, like, close to 4 hours, 4.5 hour, 5 hour documentary.
How long was your rough cut?
Like almost 9 hours, huh? 8 to 9 hours.
Woo. Is there a chance that we might see the director's cut in some form?
I mean, you can go on, like, you won't see that, but you might see like clips like on genius.com. Or time.com, you know, you might see unseen clips that we have, things that we had to cut out. You will see, you know, it's hard sometimes to cut, but thank God for, like, you know, Connor Schell and Ted Schillinger and Imani Martin, who gave us our first break when we did Benji and really taught us how to really structure a documentary. And at those times when we did Benji, we learned that, okay, you can't fall in love with certain things. If it's not moving the story forward, then you have to. Then no matter how good it is, no matter how, you know, the press is gonna be like eating it up. You have to move the story forward, and thank God to people like Nina Bon Jovi and Stacey Collin Jackson and these people who had taught us how to like and led us to like get books like Story by Robert McKee and Saving the Cat to learn how to write screenplays. I mean, Chike had been writing screenplays. Chike, you said it best about the rehearsal. You said, Chike.
Everything has been a rehearsal for this moment. You know, this is a piece of work that we truly believe. Everything we've learned up to this point, even our team with our editors, Max and Jason, my producers, Marjorie, like we've all worked together. Jay Ivey, who wrote the project, and Live Footage and Citizen Chance, who did the score. These are people like we've cultivated relationships with over the past couple of projects. So when we got into this project, we were all seasoned together. And if we told this story 5 years ago, it wouldn't be told this way because we wouldn't have had the knowledge to even approach it this way. But that knowledge, to your point earlier, helped us condense this 300 and something hours so it wasn't so daunting, because once we identified the type of story and journey we wanted to take you on, you know, we knew that we couldn't take you down all these rabbit holes. So it made it easy for us to like decipher what footage, even though some footage was super viral, it doesn't make sense for the story we're trying to tell you.
What do you miss most from the stuff you cut out?
Oh, there's some good stuff, man. There's some good stuff. There was some tension that happened. It was kind of like a fight that we kind of had to take out. That, you know, I thought was very interesting because it lets you know the climate that you're dealing with. Like this shit is still real. It's still hip hop. Like you're still in Chicago. Like it's not a cakewalk. Like there's real adversity. There's adversity. Like that fight could have gone a different direction. You know what I'm saying? But again, like, and that was a thing that nobody would ever seen, you know, a bottle gets cracked. Like it's a clip, you know, but it just didn't make sense for the film, you know, that we're trying to make.
And then move the story forward.
I thought the part with Doug Infinite was really, really flattering for Kanye, because it showed the way he handled that was so mature. People can say whatever they want, but he was as a young guy, just talking it out with the guy, giving him a pound and just, whereas anyone from any situation might have handled that differently. That said a lot about him, actually.
Especially in hip hop, where we promote such this like toxic masculinity, this like, you know, to see like him not buy into that. That's just not, and you can still make it. Like you don't have to buy into that persona in this game, you know? And to us, you don't have to buy into persona as a black man in life.
If you had to pick one scene that best captures Kanye in all his complexity.
I can tell you the scene that to me, I identify with the Kanye that I love the most. You know what I'm saying? This is the scene when they're in Denny's and they're sitting in Denny's together and Kanye's like making, he's like, cause he just, you know, had his mouth wide shut. So he was just drinking fluids. So he lost some weight. And he's like, I feel like I got me a little six pack. You know what I'm saying? Like he's making jokes and just like to see him so light. You know what I mean? I love seeing Kanye light when he doesn't feel like he's carrying a burden or a weight. And even if that burden might be, he might have created the burden for himself of just trying to outdo and bring all these ideas to fruition. You know what I mean? When you have so many expectations of yourself, you can also put those burdens with you. So the moments I see Kanye just light and carefree, to me, it just brings a smile to my face. You know what I'm saying?
And what it was amazing about G.K. said that is that that is Kanye. The cameras are not there all the time. When I'm there, I might have the camera, but we all kicking in homies. That is Kanye, that scene. And if you notice, in China, those scenes was happening there too. You know, that is the Kanye. But what you might see when the cameras are rolling or when there's a crowd is a different, you know, it's like, it's really whatever they want to put, but how comfortable can you be with a big old camera and a bunch of people and lights and all that. I know it's reality shows and all, you know, I know that, but how comfortable can you really be unless you're with the people that love you? And that's the Kanye that from that Denny scene to the scene and when we eating in Japan, this the same Kanye. You just, we're not going to see that. You're just not going to, unless you his boy, you're not going to see that.
And that's our show for today. Rolling Stone Music Now will be back on Sirius XM's Volume Channel 106. In the meantime, we are, of course, a podcast. Download us as a podcast. Subscribe to us as a podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts if you possibly can. That's always appreciated. But as always, thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.